Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Siegel, Judge Flory, Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good morning and welcome to this Zoom session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals on July 18th, 2023. We have three cases on for hearing this morning. The first is State versus Dahl. Would each of the attorneys please introduce themselves before each leg of your argument? Each attorney will have 15 minutes and appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal time. And with that, we'll hear from counsel for our appellant.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Suzanne Senecal Hill, and I'm an attorney with the State Public Defender's Office representing appellant Jeremiah Dahl. We're here today because the state asked for oral argument, and there are two issues before this court. First, Mr. Dahl's conviction must be reversed because the state failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt an essential element of the charged crime. Specifically, the state failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Dahl committed the crime in the county in which he was charged. Second, Mr. Dahl is entitled to additional jail credit because he was held in custody in connection with the crime in this case, and because the state had probable cause to charge him with that crime long before the state actually did so. I know that we have limited time here today, so I'd like to focus my attention on the venue issue. And frankly, that issue is a simple and straightforward sufficiency argument. Once you wade through all of the pretrial venue discussions that the state highlights in its brief, the record is clear that everyone understood, including the state and the district court, that the state was required to prove the venue element. This was made clear at the February 3rd, 2022 hearing, right before trial, where the state acknowledged that the defense was reserving the right to argue that the state must prove that venue element beyond a reasonable doubt. And
hey, Ms. Seneca Hill, I have some questions for you, if I may. So the trial was in Olmsted County, yes?
Correct.
And the evidence at trial, what did it establish in terms of where the offense occurred?
The district court's findings are quite clear that it could have occurred in any one of three counties. The district court did not make a finding that the state proved where the crime occurred in a specific county beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay. Do you think the evidence supports any finding in terms of where the crime occurred?
Sure, if you, as long as you're going to acknowledge that in order to do that, you would have to, as the fact finder, make a credibility determination. And that's the beauty of having this court trial is we have the district court's findings, and the district court did not credit one part of JL's information over another. Instead, the district court found that it could have occurred in any one of three counties, which is not a finding beyond a reasonable doubt, that it occurred in Olmsted County.
Okay. So we don't have a finding beyond a reasonable doubt. That's your position. See, this is what's interesting to me about this case because it's a bench trial. If there were a jury trial, we wouldn't have any findings telling us what the jury decided. We would just look at the record and determine whether it was sufficient to reach the necessary conclusion. And can we not do that here? Are we bound by the district court's findings?
You are bound by the district court's findings because the district court isn't just acting as the judge. The district court is acting as a fact finder. And this court has made it very plain for a number of years that the state is required to prove venue beyond a reasonable doubt. And you don't have that finding that the state met its burden of proof on that particular element.
But what I'm saying is this. Does that matter? If we look at the record and conclude, oh, well, beyond a reasonable doubt, here's what the evidence shows. I mean, you're raising a sufficiency challenge, and we have a standard of review that applies to sufficiency challenges. And we use the same standard, whether the fact finder was a jury or a district court judge. Are you aware of any case law that says when reviewing a conviction for sufficiency of evidence, when the conviction resulted from a court trial, we are bound by the district court's findings of fact?
Gosh, I hadn't thought of it in that way, but what I can tell you is that this is a factual determination. It's not a legal determination. And the case law is abundantly clear that when it comes to factual determinations, this court doesn't get into credibility determinations.
Okay. Let me ask this. So the district court judge found it could have occurred in Olmsted, and what are the other two counties?
Olmsted, Fillmore, and I always blank on the third one. The only reasonable doubt find, oh, so sorry. The only reasonable doubt finding.
Okay, so you can't tell me what the third county was? That was my question.
Sorry, something
no,
came up on
okay.
my computer. It's so distracting. The only beyond a reasonable doubt finding that the court made was that JL, that venue, the state proved venue beyond a reasonable doubt because JL was found in Maurer County, but Maurer County isn't where the case was tried.
Well,
so
well, but okay, the case was tried in Olmsted County, and
correct.
That's where the complaining witness gave a statement saying she'd been sexually abused, correct?
Correct. After we
why isn't this case like, and I don't know how to pronounce the name of this case, Krejcik, Krejci.
Well, I read Krejcik to be, so again, we need to back up a little bit and understand that there are three legal principles at play. We have the overarching jurisdiction. Who
okay,
has,
let me ask my question because I'm aware of the legal
sure.
principles at play.
So
in
then
Krejcik,
we can talk.
The court said, the Minnesota Supreme Court said, venue was proper in Hennepin County under the child abuse, a special statute for child abuse, saying that the child was found in Hennepin County because that's where the abuse was revealed or reported. So applying
sure.
that logic here, why couldn't we say, well, on this record, the abuse was reported in Olmsted County. And the Minnesota Supreme Court has said, well, that is enough to trigger proper venue. In other words, the child is found where the abuse is reported.
So a couple of things on that. The way I read that case, and I won't try and pronounce it either. We know what case we're talking about. I read that as more of a vicinage. That was a challenge to, you know, so you can have a challenge to vicinage, where is the jury pulled from? And then you can have a challenge to venue as an element of the offense.
Why
I see that.
Say it's a case about vicinage and not a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence.
And I apologize, I don't have the case pulled up in front of me, but my understanding was that's the procedural posture of it, that there was a challenge, a pretrial challenge to what we would call vicinage. So where the jury is pulled from. Based on a constitutional provision, as opposed to arguing the state failed to prove venue beyond a reasonable doubt as an element of the offense. I also note that in what happened in that case is, yes, the child went to the hospital in Hennepin County, and that's where the physical abuse, the injuries from the physical abuse was found. That's not the same thing in this case. In this case, JL was living in Maurer County and had to make a disclosure in Maurer County in order to get to that interview with the police in Olmsted County. That's how I read that record. I don't read the record to be all of a sudden on her own without telling anyone. She just shows up at the police station and discloses it. So I think there's a second step there. And also,
one additional question, and then I know that
sure.
my colleagues likely have questions. just so I'm clear on what happened here. The record shows that the complaining witness resided in Maurer County.
In 2018, that is correct. She was living with her dad.
All right. And the statute says there can be venue where the child is found. The Supreme Court in Krejcik says the child's found where the abuse is reported. Our case law says the child is found where the child resides. So Maurer would be a legitimate venue location.
Correct.
Okay. So if this trial had occurred in Maurer County, would you be saying the evidence was insufficient?
No. And for the reason.
Okay. So My next question is, what do we do about the fact that the district court judge was very clearly willing to transfer the case to Maurer County so we wouldn't be in this position? I'm struggling with, and I understand there's a difference between venue location and venue as an element of the offense, but it does seem a little odd that a defendant would be able to be in court and raise the venue issue and have the judge say, okay, that's great, we'll send it to Maurer so we don't have any concerns on appeal about whether you were tried in the right place. And then the defendant turns around and says, well, you didn't try me in the right place. You didn't prove that it happened here in Olmsted.
But that is what, so I have a lot to say on that, but essentially that is what another difficult case to pronounce, Eibersteiner basically says, is you can challenge it pretrial in terms of where is the jury pulled from, and then you can also challenge it as an element of the offense. And at the time, the state was saying, we're going to prove venue beyond a reasonable doubt by A, B, and C, and there was, like, you know, the rod, the invocation of the distance between the county lines. There, in the amended complaint, there are lots of ways that the state said that it was going to try and prove it. It wasn't until the first day of trial that the state says, okay, so I'm not, the state actually says, I am not going to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt that the crime happened in Olmsted County. I'm going to rely on the fact that she was found in Maurer County, and that's why I'm going to prove this element. But if we take it back a second, again, we have two different principles at play. So what I hear you saying is that the defense, the defendant has to make the job easier for the state. You know,
wait a minute. If I could just interject, and sure. I'm sorry, and because we will let you finish. I'm sure Judge Larkin, the presiding judge, will allow you to finish your answer. So is it the defendant's position, appellant's position, that 627.15 applies only to vicinage? Because otherwise, like, tell me if I'm way off on a left, you know, turn, I shouldn't be here. But otherwise, it seems like the district court made a finding that the child was found in Maurer County. So that should satisfy that as an element of the crime proved. And then it seems like the appellant waived moving to Maurer County. It is, again, kind of what Judge Larkin was saying. You're trying to have your cake and eat it too. So is that wrong thinking? Is 627.15 only apply to vicinage? And if so, what do you base that on?
No, but what 627.15 is very clear that you can either try it in the county where the abuse occurred or the county where the child is found. So if the state's theory was that we're going to prove venue as an element of the offense by saying she was found in Maurer County, then it was up to the state to make sure that this case was tried in Maurer County. What Judge Larkin is basically saying, I apologize for being so maybe stark about it, but what you're saying is that
why is this not an invited error? I guess
because Eibenhauser's, or however you pronounce it, says it's not. Eibenhauser says that you can challenge vicinage pre-trial, but then you can also challenge this as an element of the offense. And what I really haven't been able to get out yet is, you are saying that the defendant has to make the job easier for the state. You are saying that because the defendant said, okay, well, I will agree not to move this to, we don't have to move it to Maurer County, that somehow the defendant was supposed to do that in order to make the state's job easier. The defendant doesn't have to do anything. The state has all the power here.
I don't want you to misinterpret my question. I wasn't suggesting that the defendant has to make things easier for the state. My concern is when you have a situation where the defendant is here now complaining, saying this conviction needs to be reversed because I should have been tried in Maurer County, and the judge offered to have it tried in Maurer County, and the defendant said, no, I don't want to have it tried in Maurer County. It does seem like an invited error.
But the one piece you're missing is that it's not just about transferring to Maurer County. What the statute requires is that it has to be charged in Maurer County, and that wasn't happening. It was
Where does the statute say it has to be charged in Maurer County?
Well, it says that it has to be prosecuted in either the county where the alleged abuse occurred or the county where the child is found. And so if you...
So why does, I mean, why can't you have a complaint filed in one county and then venue is transferred? I mean, when venue is transferred, do we have a new complaint filed or does the original complaint just get transferred?
Well, when you're talking about venue as an element of the offense, where this court has said it has to, you have to try the case in the county where the crime occurred. And so when you put those two pieces together, it's not...
Wait. So aren't you conflating vicinage there with venue being an element of the crime? Because you're saying, no, then it has to be charged. But I don't think you... I mean, where does it say that as an element of the crime, the state has to prove that... that it's the same county as the county charged. I thought it was the same county where the crime occurred, which could be, which the court made a finding if 627.15 is applicable, and I think you're saying it can be applicable, was Maurer County.
With the way that I see that my time is up, I can either respond now or wait till...
Please answer.
Okay. The way that I read this court's case law on venue specifically as an element of the offense that the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt is that you have to prove that the crime happened in the county in which the case is tried. And to me, say just essentially transferring it to Maurer County wouldn't be enough. But even so, that's not the procedural posture we have here. The defendant didn't have any obligation to agree to move the case if you're talking about venue as vicinage, which is one of the things that he challenged. No matter what happens with the vicinage issue, the defendant still retains the right to argue that the state failed to prove venue.
I have a question on that. If the defendant here, if the appellant here challenged vicinage pretrial, and he was saying this shouldn't be charged and prosecuted in Olmsted County, why then did he object to the idea of moving it to a different county?
I don't think he objected to the idea. What he said is, it's not my responsibility to move to change venue. The obligation is on the state. The state has the charging power. The state is the one that decides all the evidence. The state is the one that decides how to prosecute a case, not the defendant. The defendant has no obligation to help the state out with any of that. So as it relates to vicinage, the defendant didn't have to do anything.
But he did. You're telling us appellant challenged vicinage, saying venue was improper at the pretrial stage. The judge said, all right, I'm willing to grant your request. I will change venue. And then appellant said, no, we don't want to move.
That wasn't what the argument the defense attorney made. And I know I'm going way over time. The defense attorney's argument was, this falls squarely at the feet of the state. If the state wants to argue that venue as an element of the offense is Maurer County, the state needs to take the appropriate course of action in order to have the case tried in Maurer County. And the state didn't do that. That's not the defendant's fault. Regardless, he could have waived that entire issue of vicinage. It still doesn't preclude him from arguing now that the state failed to prove venue as an element of the offense, which is completely different from vicinage. Thank you.
Okay. And your argument as to why Krizik doesn't control here, in other words, why we shouldn't write an opinion saying the state did prove venue as an element because venue is proper any place the child was found, and the Supreme Court has said a child is found where the abuse is discovered. We should limit Krizik to the vicinage concept and not the element concept.
I think so. And also, you need to keep in mind what the state argued at trial. The state argued at trial, I am proving venue as an element of the offense because I'm relying on the special venue statute. And I'm saying that she was found in Maurer County. And that's how I am meeting the venue element. That was the state's argument below. And again, to the extent of where the child was found, this court has said it's where the child resides. And we don't really have a full record of, again, this is different from child abuse, where the police go in and discover the abuse.
But the Supreme Court also said the statute governing venue in child abuse cases is to be interpreted broadly. This court has rejected arguments, and the Supreme Court has rejected arguments that that statute is limited to ongoing abuse allegations. I mean, or in cases where it's not clear. I mean, the Supreme Court has pretty much said it's wide open. So I don't understand why that case wouldn't control here and wouldn't support a finding that venue is an element of the offense, as an element, because I think Ali calls that into question, wasn't satisfied here under Krizak. But you can address that on rebuttal. Why don't we hear from the state? Please introduce yourself for the record before beginning your argument.
Please, the court. Counsel, my name is James Haas. I'm an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota in this case. May I ask, can everyone hear me okay?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to start off with an opportunity to try to answer Judge Larkin's questions about why the evidence submitted at trial is sufficient on its face, and secondly, why I'm going to call it Krejci. This Minnesota Supreme Court case controls here. And the second part I'd like to talk about is why the state of Minnesota should abandon its court-created rule of a venue as an element of the offense, and why we should follow the example of California and have a different procedural posture to that. Let me start off with the evidence itself. And I, to answer the court's question, when it's a sufficiency of the evidence claim, this court, I think, is free to look at the record itself. As the court points out, if this were a jury trial, we wouldn't know what the fact finder considered and what weight they placed on things. You would look at the record below, and they can still do that here. In this case, I would submit the best and strongest evidence presented was the August 3rd, 2018 corner house interview by investigator Ann Johnson, a Rochester police officer. The interview occurred in Rochester, Minnesota, at the Child Advocacy Center. And in that interview, the child unequivocally stated that she'd been sexually abused at Doll's house in Dover, Minnesota, which is squarely in Olmsted County. And that evidence was presented by stipulation of the parties as substantive evidence that can be considered for all purposes. Now, there's a reason why Judge Chase did not make more specific findings as to venue. It's because the parties all stipulated and agreed that venue would be satisfied if it occurred in the third judicial district. Remember, this case started off as a jury trial, and the state had amended the complaint and provided special jury instructions as to venue because years had gone by and they'd interviewed the child before trial. And she said, you know, it could happen in Chatfield. It might have happened in this other place. And she described, you know, numerous inappropriate touchings. And ultimately, Mr. Dahl raised no objection to that instruction and said, you know, fine. And then later waived jury trial. But the evidence itself in the record, and I would submit the strongest and best evidence and the most persuasive evidence, was that it occurred in Dover at his house. But even if it didn't, the Supreme Court's holding in Krejci is quite clear. In Krejci, the child had been physically abused in Renville County. When they visited, they were in Hennepin County, and the child lapsed into a coma because of the traumatic head injuries and was brought to Children's Hospital. And of course, that's where social services, law enforcement got involved. It's where the case was investigated. Krejci, by the way, was a court trial before Judge Franklin Knoll in Hennepin County. It says so on page 409 of the opinion. So this isn't a vicinage issue as to where the jury was drawn. It's just like this case. It's a court trial. And Krejci objected to venue pre-trial, and that matter was heard at omnibus hearing, and they decided, nope, It's appropriate in Hennepin County. And so it was a squarely a question of law that was reviewed on appeal. And it was a pretrial decision that had been fully litigated. Unlike in this case, where the defendant effectively waived or stipulated the question of venue. This court has recently weighed in on this question. In fact, Judge Larkin authored the Paulson decision from March 27th, describing venue as a constitutional jury right. And that's the position the state takes here, that like other jury rights, like having competent counsel, having an unbiased jury panel, having a public trial, that these are matters of law that the district court decides. And if those rights are not vindicated, the remedy would be a remand for a new trial, but it's not an element of the offense. It's important to remember here, Mr. Dahl is claiming, he doesn't quite say it in his brief, but effectively a double jeopardy argument to say that the evidence was insufficient and therefore the state didn't prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's not what we do with other trial rights. And I pointed out the United States Supreme Court recently weighed in on this double jeopardy question in the Smith case. Maybe I should stop and take a breath here if there's any questions from the panel. If not, I'll.
Yeah, my question is this, because I think this is where you're going next. I understand you would have us reverse Pierce, which says that by statute, the legislature incorporated venue as an element of the offense. But in walking that decision back, the case on which Pierce relied was an opinion written by Judge Lansing, and I don't have my Westlaw to give you the name. But in that case, this court cited a couple Minnesota Supreme Court cases in which they treated venue as an element of the offense. So I do think there is Supreme Court case law that treats venue as an element of the offense. So I don't see how, even if we reversed Pierce, you still have Supreme Court cases treating venue as an element. I think unless you get the Supreme Court to change its approach, maybe consistent with statements it made in Ali, you're stuck with venue as an element for purposes today. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I went back and looked at some of those Supreme Court cases. I'm trying to find the quote from it, and that's a cite. One was a 19, and I think it was cited in, been cited in Paulson. One was a DWI case. And in that case, it was a court trial, and there was testimony that the defendant was stopped on a particular highway. But I don't think there was any specific statement or testimony that it occurred in Ramsey County. And the judge said, well, we all know that highway is such and such, and this location is in Ramsey County, even though there was no testimony that it was, I'll take judicial notice of it. And so what was being reviewed is the district court taking judicial notice of, this location and this venue, assuming for the sake of argument that venue is an element, and finding no problem.
Why would there be any need to assess whether or not the district court was erred by taking judicial notice of the location of the offense if the location of the offense wasn't an element or wasn't being treated as an element?
Well, I think they just simply assumed for purposes of that argument that it was, and that wasn't really squarely before the court. I pulled this up yesterday, but I was looking at one of those older pre-merger cases. And I understand this is an error correcting court, not a policy making court. Nevertheless, it is the Court of Appeals that has perpetuated this court created rule. And again, it's up to this case, as the venue issue, can be decided squarely and succinctly on the record and existing law. And maybe we end it there. But I do think it's worth discussing this policy question. If you haven't fully read the Posey decision from California, I really encourage you to do it. And I think the facts are particularly interesting.
And that's a Supreme Court decision?
Not only is it the California Supreme Court, but the United States Supreme Court denied certiorari. And if I might indulge the court with just the recitation of the facts briefly, I think it underscores the point. In California, the way they used to do it, findings of fact as to the substantive elements of the crime were shown, the state had proved beyond a reasonable doubt. The state also had to prove venue, but they only had to prove that by a preponderance of the evidence. So the way they did it was they would instruct the jury on the law of the elements and ask them to find guilt or innocence beyond a reasonable doubt. They would then secondly instruct on the law of venue and ask the jury to find by a preponderance of the evidence if venue was sufficient. So that was how they instructed at that time. Posey was a drug case. There was a detective in Marin County. I'm told that's how it's pronounced. It's neighboring San Francisco County on the other side of the Golden Gate Bridge. And the detective was targeting a drug dealer in San Francisco County. And the detective set up two controlled buys where he himself went and bought drugs from this drug dealer. The Posey, the suspect here, refused to come across the bridge into Marin County, seeking rather the more forgiving venue of San Francisco County to do his transactions. And so the detective, even he made the phone calls from his office in Marin
Counsel,
County.
I'm just way far afield here. Let's focus on law. Are you aware of any case, and I'll ask Ms. Seneca Hill to answer this as well, in which an appellate court of this state reversed a conviction based on insufficient evidence because venue wasn't established? So Pierce is what we have. Any Minnesota Supreme Court case where they've reversed saying there was insufficient evidence of venue, cases reversed?
I don't know of one.
Okay.
I'm not saying there isn't. I don't know. I didn't come across one, but there could be one. But I didn't find one in my research.
All right.
Well, in any event, again, I understand this are perhaps policy questions beyond the immediate question before this court, but I think reading the California decision and going through the purposes of venue, why it is a trial right, why it makes sense for district courts to do this, make this decision before trial. Not only does it prevent the defendant from having to stand trial in an inappropriate place, it eliminates the state having to go through those resources and try it in an inappropriate place.
So,
and of course,
I'm sorry. So, can I just ask you to respond to Ms. Seneca Hill's argument that it wasn't the responsibility of appellant to insist that the case be moved to Maurer County if we're looking at Maurer as the county where the child was found?
Well, it just underscores that venue or vicinage is a constitutional trial right of the defendant, and all rights can be waived. I don't know how to say it anymore.
So was this a waiver? It seems like Ms. Senko Hill is saying absolutely not. It's just that appellant didn't insist it be moved. That was incumbent on the state to make that argument or to ask the court saying, yeah, really, let's move this case because this is an issue.
Well, I think Olmsted County was the correct county. First of all, the strongest evidence was that the abuse occurred in Dover, Minnesota, in Olmsted County. That was the first report. It was the strongest report. And it wasn't really denied by the witness. It's just that, you know, years had gone by. And of course, she disclosed additional touching. So I think, one, the evidence was still strongest that it occurred in Olmsted County. And two, we have, you know, Supreme Court case law, Krejci, that says you can prosecute in the county where the crime is reported, even though nothing of the crime at all happened in that county. We're much closer here. And Krejci was, there was no dispute that the abuse happened in Renville County, nowhere near Hennepin County. Here, we have strong evidence, the best evidence, that occurred in Olmsted County. So I disagree that the state had any sort of obligation to prosecute it in Maurer. But even so, it wasn't just the judge. It was the prosecutor. If you go back to the record, read it. Mike Walters was very clear and said, we will gladly try this in Maurer County. I can be deputized as an assistant Maurer County attorney. We're glad to do it. And Judge Stevens similarly said, I'll pick up the phone and we'll schedule it in Maurer County. It's an invited error, as we've argued below. And again, that's why this is a trial right, not an essential element of the offense. And
if it's an invited error, we still review for plain error. Would you walk us through the plain error analysis?
Sure. And I talk about that in my brief of the Polzinski four factors here. There has to be an error. I argue there is none. Two, there has to be plain on its face. And I think it's obscured here by the defendant's own decisions. There has to be prejudice to the defendant. And here I see none. Judge Chase could hear this case in any county in the state of Minnesota. Doesn't really matter where we're sitting. And finally, to get relief, Dahl has to demonstrate that this somehow calls into question the integrity and reputation, maybe I'm misquoting it, of the judicial system here. It has to call into question the fairness. I don't want to misquote it. It's in my brief here, but that's effectively the fourth prong. And there's just nothing unfair. Dahl does not dispute on appeal that he sexually abused this child. And there is absolutely no dispute that the sexual abuse occurred in the third judicial district, either in Olmsted County or Maurer County or Fillmore County. What Dahl seeks is an unwarranted procedural windfall that's not supported by the evidence here. And so I'd respectfully ask the court to affirm the conviction.
Thank you. Ms. Seneca Hill, your rebuttal, please.
Okay, first of all, in order to accept the state's waiver argument, the court has to ignore what this court said in Eibersteiner, which is that what we call vicinage is separate from a venue as an element of the offense. And this court would also have to ignore Blue, in which this court said, objections to improper venue are deemed waived where the defendant does not object to the venue before trial. Here we have sort of this idea that the state is saying that Mr. Dahl abandoned it. So that kind of fits into that first notion. But then this court says the waiver does not relieve the state of its burden of proving venue. So regardless of what happened with this argument on vicinage, there's no way under this court's precedent that Mr. Dahl waived his right to argue venue as an element of the offense. In terms of Supreme Court case law, I do want to correct myself in my reply brief where I said that Heidelberg, they reversed when actually they didn't. But it still shows that even as far back as 1944, the Supreme Court was operating with this idea that venue is something that the state proves beyond a reasonable doubt. In terms of a case where something was reversed, I would note City of Fairmont v. Sostrom, 157 Northwest 2nd, 849. The element was a DWI ordinance driving on a street within the city. And the Supreme Court concluded there was no admissible evidence on that element. So the court reversed the conviction. So we do have precedent from the Supreme Court. Although the Supreme Court has not said this is an essential element, the Supreme Court has treated it as though the state has to prove the element beyond a reasonable doubt.
Can't a defendant waive, separately from venue as a location, can't the defendant waive proof of an element of the offense?
Well, the defendant can
waive. We do it when the defendant has a prior, doesn't want the jury to hear he's got a prior DWI, doesn't want the jury to hear he has a prior domestic, when those are used to enhance.
Happen here. There was no, Mr. Dahl did not waive his right to have the state prove that element beyond a reasonable doubt. So under any machination of the state's argument, the only way you can agree with the state is to overrule your own precedent. Getting to Kreschke, I pulled it up. I didn't have it printed out, but I pulled it up. That is not a sufficiency argument. That is a where do we bring the defendant to trial? And I get that it's a court trial, but still the procedural posture is where do we bring the defendant to trial? Again, that is completely separate from venue as an element of the offense that the state is required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And nowhere in Kreschke is there a discussion about venue as an element of the offense that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
But I don't under, I agree with you, and it was a constitutional issue. But at the end of the day, the holding is that the child is found where the abuse is reported. Why doesn't that holding translate to this case? I mean,
because
even
you
though
have,
they
you have
didn't talk about sufficiency, they said that that's how they defined found.
Right. And that's in terms of where are you going to have this trial? Not this isn't a discussion.
Why
about
does it matter, though? Big picture. We have a statute that says
that. You've said what? That it matters.
Pardon?
You've said that it matters. You've said that there's a
okay,
difference.
But listen, listen to the question. Kreschke says a child is found where abuse is reported or discovered. So why doesn't that legal principle, that legal holding, apply both to the location of the trial as well as the need to prove venue as an element of the offense? Why doesn't Kreschke tell us when you're determining whether or not the state has proved venue as an element of the offense, we look to Kreschke and say, well, venue is where the child is found, and that means where the child reported the abuse or the abuse was discovered. I don't understand why that broader legal concept, in other words, Kreschke tells us how you defined found in the venue statute. Why doesn't that definition apply when you're determining whether or not the element has been proved beyond a reasonable doubt?
What Kreschke is, there are different burdens of proof. Kreschke isn't a burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt case. And without—
What does it matter though? What if Kreschke just tells us how we define the word found in the relevant statute?
Then I think you're back to having the benefit of the district court's findings in this case. The district court's findings under that special venue statute were not that the child was found in—
But we review the record, and if we look at the record and it supports that the child gave a statement in Olmsted County, and that would satisfy the definition of found in Kreschke, why can't we say the evidence was sufficient because it shows the child was found as defined in Kreschke in Olmsted County? So venue was proved.
Because what happened in this case is not that a physical assault where she's at the hospital and the law enforcement comes in and discovers it. This is, she's already talked about how—
But as to that, I would say, how do you make that argument in the face of the Supreme Court language in Kreschke saying the relevant statute where the child is found is going to be broadly interpreted, as well as subsequent case law saying we're not going to limit it this way, we're not going to limit it this way. It's a broad interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would also point this court to its own case in Rucker where it says, for the purposes of that special venue statute, a child can be found in the county where the child resided, either when the abuse occurred or when the abuse was discovered. So,
but that's one definition of found, and then Kreschke gives us another definition of found. I don't dispute that that's what we've said, but...
Sure, but I think if you're going to, and I see I'm way out of time, but I think if you're going to apply that, then it's very fact-specific. Kreschke is a different factual scenario where you have physical abuse where the child's at the hospital and that's when the police discovered it. That's not the same factual situation that we have here where a couple steps removed by the time she actually is interviewed. I think it's a corner house interview. We all know that by the time you get to the corner house interview, this has already been reported. So I think it makes most sense that the district court followed what the state's argument was at trial, which is I'm going to prove venue as an element of the offense of beyond a reasonable doubt by relying on the fact that she was residing in Maurer County when this abuse was discovered. That was the state's theory. That is what the district court found. And I see no reason for this court to reverse that factual determination. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any additional questions? Then the matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days. Thank you for the arguments and your patience and the briefing.
Thank you, Your Honors.